It was like I'd been living in a foreign country for a long time, and I was getting to speak with someone in my native language again. Welcome to Clock or Counter. I'm James Wiseman, and with me is Ryan Young. So as I'm sure most of you are aware, we've been on a little bit of a hiatus, but we're coming back a whole 4 weeks late on our post-Worlds analysis. So Ryan and I were both in Warsaw, Poland for a very successful 2024 FPAW. Would you agree, Ryan?
Yeah, it fired me up.
Yeah, it fired me up too. It fired the whole Durham jam scene up. So that's been awesome. Like Ray is already talking how he needs to find a way to live in a freestyle city now. So that's how much Warsaw meant to him. And really great tournament organization from Micah and Conrad. I think it's definitely a superstar organizational performance and a lot of contributions from the whole Polish jam scene, which is so much bigger than I even realized just when they were doing the photo at the end and all the people that helped. So big shout out to all them. So what we're going to do today is first, we'll just talk very briefly about the podium in each round, give everyone the results if you're living under a rock and haven't heard. And then I've made up some sort of goofy awards that I'm going to give out to people and teams and other things. And then we'll have some other random updates at the end. But we'll start with world stuff because that's probably all anyone really wants to hear about. So, Ryan, why don't you take us through the results of Worlds?
Okay, we're going to start with open pairs because they played first. So we're just going to do the podium. In third place was Timic Wartek and Thomas Nutzi. And I thought they played very well early in the pool and they deserved the third place. So I think
agreed. And I think they were just
the results, okay, and then we'll go back and talk.
Sounds good.
Okay. In second place was Daniel O'Neill and Fabian Dinklage. And then winning was Ricardo Montanari and Francesco Santolin.
And what are you seeing in these results? Were they close?
Third place was distanced, but the top two were close, separated by only 2 points, which in this system is less than 1%. And I judged this round. So like I see it more from the AI execution, which I was judging. Mm-hmm. And it was in like once I saw because like Ricardo played and Chesco played second and I saw Daniel and Fabi play first. And I was like, I think they just won when I saw the Daniel and Fabi play.
Yeah, agreed. For sure. They really threw down. I think if I remember correctly, they had a really dicey section kind of in the middle. I think it was like a speed flow section, but everything else was super clean and really well executed. And they played to a great song, which obviously I think it's great because me and you played to it at some point, but it has like a ton of music cues that they were really hitting and working with. It was interesting. I noticed when I was watching back the videos that you were judging, that's probably the first time you've judged a round in how long?
Since 2016, I think.
Wow. So real amateur on the judging panel with Ryan actually judging around. How did that even happen that you ended up judging? There was just nobody around?
I mean, finals day, it's always like that because the top eight teams of players are playing, so they're unavailable.
No, I know, but it's always like that, and you never judge. So,
I have to run the system. So,
no, I know why you don't normally judge, but I was surprised that.
Oh, why? I had the opportunity because, like, this time, yeah.
One thing that's interesting, just looking at the score sheet, which I think is available on freestylejudge.com if people want to look at the details of the scores, is I see that in AI, two of the judges had the same score per each team. So like Daniel and Fabi got 18-6-7, 18-6-7 from two judges. And those same two judges gave the same score to Ricardo and Chesco, 17-3-3, 17-3-3. But the third judge saw those teams more equally. And that made a pretty significant impact because it's about a 1.5 spread. So one AI judge seeing it a little differently had a big impact, not a decisive impact. But it seems like what probably mattered the most for Ricardo and Chesco winning is variety, where they scored several points higher than like per judge was several points higher. So I guess, yeah, like 11 points more than their competitors. And then, you know, here again, we have the spread that's always a little bit uncomfortable where general impression, Daniel and Fabi scored higher than Ricardo and Chesco. but super close nail biter. I was doing commentary the whole finals, which is kind of its own interesting experience, which we talk about a little bit at the end. And that's obviously pretty different from judging, but I was sort of trying to think about how I saw the teams. And when I saw Ricardo and Chesko in person, I knew it would be close, but I kind of thought they would win just based on the judging system and all the kind of short, fast, difficult combos they had. But when I rewatched the commentary, I think if I didn't know the results, I probably would have thought Daniel and Fabi won. But that's also like one of those things where sometimes how it feels in person is different than how it feels on video. But cool, yeah, that we had a close round.
Sorry, we're talking about this earlier about how variety is decisive in these results. And I think we're going to see that again. But like when I watch it in real time and on the video, I don't really feel the variety difference, but I can see, but it shows up in the scores. So that's interesting.
It's interesting to me because we've done so many tournaments under the new judging system. And I don't think there's ever been a long conversation about variety or it counting too much or too little. Right? Like we've never talked about variety. It's never come up as a big issue before.
Yeah.
But this is the first tournament where it felt like it mattered.
Yeah. It's kind of been a non-factor. Like it kind of followed the general impression, but it did not this tournament.
Maybe it's hard to tell. Is it teams that have a higher quantity score always get a higher quality score? Like what's exactly going, what happens? How does it snowball?
So I think it's the two disc routine because in both places I saw it matter a lot. One, the lower variety had one disc and the higher variety had two discs. Mm-hmm. And you just like rack up so many more moves with twice as many discs.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always saying how concerned I am about multiple disc routines. Again, I don't think I have a right answer for it. I wouldn't exactly ban it or something, but I don't really know what to do about it. It was funny because when I did for the 10 millionth time to everyone's chagrin, the judging education this year, which, by the way, I think I proudly got it much shorter than it's been in the past. But in any case, people were asking all these questions that were trying to help multiple disc routines. They were so concerned that judges were missing things happening by the other disc. And how can we make sure that they get all their points? And I kept saying, don't help them. Don't help multiple disc routines. They're already so overpowered that we don't need to help them. It's by design that I don't want you to give them a score for a move you don't see. And people seem sort of shocked by that. But I was like, I don't know what to tell you. Like if you are given freebie points to multiple disc routines just because you're worried you're missing something, then you're not really understanding the system. But I don't really have a good analogy, but it's like a different sport if you have multiple discs. I mean, you literally have more scoring opportunities, and that's kind of a huge conundrum. And I also think the fact that it was moved indoors again because of weather, we haven't really seen the multiple disc routine disadvantage play out in many years because it's never been outside. So if the finals are outside, the double disc routine becomes more risky. I still think you get so much extra value from the multiple discs that it doesn't really matter that it's outside. But at least then you would hope that the double disc routine would drop it more and you could have a chance with one disc. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. The only other thing I'll say, and I was kind of talking to Daniel about this and thinking about his routine going forward, is I do think you can get a lot of the value of a double disc routine in your first minute and then go to a single disc routine and do more.
That makes a lot of sense.
What you want to do. So I do think for people who feel like the judging system is so breakable, well, a lot, like partially by design, everyone can break it and then do whatever they want. I mean, I think I could score all the points I really needed to score in 30 seconds and then have fun doing whatever I wanted after that. So that's not, I wish it were different. I wish we could have a perfect system where it just somehow accounted for all the different variables. It was totally, completely fair. I don't think we'll ever get there, but I think to some degree, and I kind of think this about some of the multiple disc routines we saw at Worlds. I think some people over index on multiple discs. It's like you got all the value in the first minute and then the next 2 minutes of it, it was actually hurting you. Like, I think probably Ricardo and Chesko's routine would have been a lot cleaner if they had done less crazy multiple disc stuff as it went on, you know, because they would have maxed out most of their diff blocks and gotten most of their variety already. And then they're, I don't know, it's just a thought to put out there. Like, you really can very quickly get the points you need and then start building something more like you want. And again, there's lots of ways to do that. It doesn't mean you have to spend your first minute with multiple jets. It's just sort of like you can find ways in your routine throughout to do the kind of short, high variety, high diff combos and then settle into a style that you may want to showcase a little bit more.
Yep.
Okay.
Wait, I wanted to say one more thing about execution because it showed up in this because I was judging it. And I told Fabi this after the day was over. I was like, when I was judging and I was thinking, because the Olympics were happening at the same time in Paris, I was like, what if I was judging execution like this was in the Olympics? I would give every stutter step a 0.1, or every time the disc was received and you had to move to get it, every step would be a 0.1. And I would give Daniel and Fabian's team 50.1s, but every other team would have over 100.1s. And that would have changed the results.
I agree with that. And I try to do that. And I have definitely penalized people for delaying it too long, for like having a take where they wobble it. I have definitely given points for extreme examples of they had to sprint awkwardly to take in a disc that was misthrown. But I think there's no reason why people can't go to that extreme. I feel like when I start to say things like that in the judging education, everyone starts scoffing and looking very concerned. But I think it's not only correct, it's more fair. Mm-hmm. And I think I said something about this when like Tom and Anka played at some round. They didn't have a very good finals, but when I was watching them, I thought like they're just 10 times cleaner than so many other teams. And yet their X score is only going to be moderately better because still people are basically only counting drops. I mean, I would love to look at the X scores, but I mean, I usually have 30 deductions of some kind, even though, as you say, I probably should have 50 or 100. But I'm guessing just looking at these X scores in pairs, this reflects basically only drops and a couple ones and twos.
Yep. I thought that would be outrage if I just did that for my one time judging.
I mean, don't just do it. Yeah. Gosh, that is definitely sort of upsetting. But we tell people that all the time and no one really takes us seriously. Okay. Let's go. Why don't you tell us about women's. What was the next round? Women's
okay. Is next. Cool. Okay. So on the podium in third place was Angela Avendano and Katie Gimma. Second place was Zofia Wilczek and Bianca Kostolova. And then winning was Ilka Simone and Char Powell.
Awesome. So tell me what you saw in this round.
So I thought this whole round or the whole division was sort of cold overall. So it kind of makes the results a lot closer than they normally would. So there's not a lot of separation. And I do.
Yeah, the top three teams are split by 4 points, basically.
Yep.
And two and three are 0.3, which is nothing. Like, it's a misclick away from one team swapping with the other.
Yeah, so it was like no one team really distanced themselves because, like, I think it's not obvious, but like when every team plays well, there is separation between the points. And when no one plays well, all the teams are really close together. That's just like a factor of how the current system works, which I find interesting. But
yeah, I mean, it was definitely super exciting that there are so many women's teams, which really played out in a crazy way in mix, just like the number of women playing and the number of new women and women just hitting higher and higher highs in terms of their game. I definitely thought the top three teams played pretty well. There's another team in the mix that I'll talk about later in my awards that I thought played awesome, and I probably would have personally put on the podium. But I don't think any of the top teams left the field feeling amazing, like they crushed it, which happens a lot. There's plenty of years where plenty of rounds no one really separates and hits the routine exactly like they wanted, but the level of difficulty was super high in the women's round, and yeah, it was pretty cool. So we'll talk more about that when I give out some of my awards, but let's now go to Open Co-op.
Okay. So in third place is Stefan Dunkel, Matyáš Gatovský, and Harold S.
Cool.
In second place, Ricardo Montanari, Francesco Santolin, and Clay Colera. And then winning is Jakob Kostel, Fabian Dinklage, and Daniel O'Neill.
Awesome. And this round does have more separation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember watching this round just on the sidelines and being like, wow, I think Jakob, Fabian, and Daniel just crushed it. And when looking at the score sheet, they did. It's like a 30% gap over third place.
Yeah, I agree. I think they crushed it. I think here again, when I was watching for commentary, I had similar thoughts as I had in pairs, where I wondered if because of the judging system, Ricardo, Chesko, and Clay were going to get all these kind of points. And I'm sure they did get a lot of points, but it still wasn't enough to beat Fabi, Jakob, and Daniel. Now, I guess if there was less of a disadvantage of Jakob, Fabi, and Daniel this round because they did have multiple discs. In fact, I think there were even periods where all three of them had a disc and were doing moves. So they didn't have the natural disadvantage of sort of like a one disc routine versus the three disc routine. Although I should have said in pairs, Fabi and Daniel did have multiple disc sections. It was just much less than Chesko and Ricky. But I think, and I'll talk more about this in my awards, just skipping ahead a little bit, that Jakob, Fabi, and Daniel were super, super awesome and played really, really well. So that was cool. And yeah, they separated by 16 points, essentially, which is not like a crazy amount, but it's definitely like a definitive win. I do love, by the way, this new feature. I don't know if it's new, but I'm only noticing it now on your results on freestylejudges.com, where it highlights the category that won.
Yeah, like, so you can see since the beginning.
Okay, well, it shows you how much I pay attention.
Yeah,
and this is the first time looking at the results where, well, I should check women's again, but besides X, which none of them are highlighted for some reason, but they did win X, they won every category. So that's always nice when you win every category. That's pretty definitive win.
Yep.
Let me just check real quick on women's. I want to see if they won every category.
Ilka and Char only won AI.
Wow. But so that's so interesting.
Large margin.
Yeah, they only... Wow, yeah. So there was four different teams in women's that won the category, which is pretty wild.
Wow, that's really cool.
It's and again, in women's, the second place team won general impression by like a somewhat significant margin, but still got second. It's so fascinating.
Yeah. I think that's just the nature of when all the teams are playing, when the round is cold.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's go to the last division. Tell us about that.
All right. Mixed pairs. So in third place was Mafer, Maria Fernanda Mesa, and Chesko Santolin. In second place was Maya Kuzinska and Ryan Young. And winning was Angela Avendano and Daniel O'Neill.
Wow. So, okay. First of all, the mixed round was a bloodbath. There were so many teams. Some teams didn't even make the finals, right? There was a cut.
Katie and Brett didn't make the cut.
This was like 2011 level mixed pairs finals. I mean, like, one general commentary, I've been worried about the last few years, just the level of competition being lower than when we first started, which I hate saying things like that, but I'm including years I was competing. So I'm not just being, you know, Debbie Downer because I wasn't competing.
Yeah.
But like, this mixed division definitely felt like a throwback to when we first started and it was a gauntlet and you were just hoping to make the finals. So this mixed finals was insane. And I'll have a lot to say about a couple teams in my award section, for this, but I think even the team that got, I think last year was really good. And a lot of teams executed super high level. But with that said, it was clear to me at the end that it was between you and Micah and Daniel and Angela. And looking at the score, it's pretty interesting. Y'all won difficulty, AI, and execution. And by the way, it's just funny to say that because under the old system, that would mean by default you won. But you got destroyed in variety and you was close in general, but they beat you in general a little bit. I do think there's a couple things at play here. Y'all were seeded really low because you had a bad semis round, I guess. So you played second. And I think that definitely hurt y'all. Now, the difference between you and Daniel's team is 5 points, which is like a significant amount, but it's not crazy. Like if it was 1 or 2 points, I'd say seeding was the sole reason y'all didn't win. I think they won by enough that it probably wasn't just seeding. But it's interesting to me. I'm impressed that you guys won diff. I think probably that's right, but I didn't know how people would view the type of routine you did. So if people haven't watched it, Micah and Ryan did a completely unique routine unlike anything I've ever seen in freestyle, where they were basically holding hands the entire routine. And it was all about that theme and choreography around that, which is super cool and super unique. But I think it also means it's harder to know how it will be judged and how it will be perceived. So you did well in diff, which I think is significant because I think some judges might have viewed it as not that hard because it was sort of simpler moves, but you have to take into account how much harder they are when you're tied to the human being next to you. And also like you still hit like monster and guided pole, but I just worried that people wouldn't see the difficulty there. You got crush and variety. That's kind of interesting because a big picture variety, it'd be like, what's more variety than doing a routine that no one's ever thought of before? But I think there was a slowness to your routine based on like style, music, whatnot, that it sort of like, I understand why you would lose variety, but here's again, variety counting a lot in worlds. I mean, the variety differential there is 12 points. That's like a chasm. Points?
Wait, yeah, it's triple the gap between the two teams.
Then AI, you won. I think that's right. And you won pretty handily, 6 points. You won execution and you barely lost general. But by the way, like general is where I think if you were seated higher, you would have tied or beaten them in general. I'm being like way too honest about my perception here. But I think like general is much more influenced by seating because people are just kind of like, this is a better team. I'm giving them more points.
I agree. But seating is earned. So we're accepting that that's okay.
Yeah. And I say that all the time. Like I feel like Dan and I have tussled about that where I'm like, seeding is earned, so if you get more points for being seeded higher, of all the biases in the judging system, that's like the one I'm least worried about because you've earned your position in the pool. But I've talked a lot about you and Micah's routine because I loved your routine. I knew it'd be super close. I thought it was a coin toss between you, Daniel, and Angela, but now let me put a little love on Daniel and Angela. They had an awesome routine, super explosive, much more like traditional freestyle. And yeah, Daniel's on like a whole nother level now. And Angela now is a 2-time world champion. So one of the top women's players in the world. And they totally crush it. Really wanted to see a barrel guide us, but we did get a barrel. That was pretty, pretty cool. And yeah, totally deserving mixed team. And what I think, as I said, was kind of the most competitive of all the divisions. So they have to be super proud of that one. Okay. Anything else on mixed?
Nope. I think that was a good, that was good.
Okay. So
rewards time. I'm excited for your awards. This is like, okay. It's
yeah. These are extremely half baked. Okay. It has to be said because it's our podcast that right now the Dota 2 World Championship is going on. So I've been pretty busy watching all the games. So these half-baked awards were written down while I was mostly paying attention to Dota. And some awards I'm not even giving out. I just made them, but there was no worthy person. And there are like some of them probably, this is an experiment. I don't know how people are going to feel about these. I don't know if anyone's going to understand the references I'm making. Some of them are probably universal, some of them not, but what, it's a work in progress. So just, you know, hang on, stay with me here. Okay. And they're also in the random order that I thought of them, not in any other particular order. So the first award, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. It's the Rocky Balboa Going the Distance Award. So for any European listeners who aren't familiar with the Academy Award-winning film, Rocky is about an underdog boxer who gets the chance to fight for the heavyweight world title. And he goes 15 rounds or however many rounds it is, and he loses. And it's a very famous ending in a movie because it's like a very inspirational sports movie where the main character still loses. But the whole theme of the movie is that he went the distance. He wasn't supposed to win. He was supposed to get slaughtered, but he made it further than anyone expected and performed better than anyone expected. So to me, this is the award to the team that really overperforms their expectations and has a very memorable tournament despite not winning. And this award was an easy pick for me. There was no hesitation. There's a reason it's the first award I thought of. It goes to Gaia and Asha, who crushed in women's pairs. And I firmly believe they should have been on the podium, but I think because of their seeding and their lack of name recognition, like reputation, they didn't get as high of scores as they deserved. But they had all the elements of a pro level winning routine.
I agree so much. When I watched them play in women's semifinals on the first day, that was like the first time I've even seen Asha and Gaia play like ever.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is going on right now? They're catching everything and hard things that take years of practice to master. I'm like, wow.
When I was watching the finals, I genuinely thought they could win, like after they got off the field. And in my head, I was already getting angry. I was like, they're going to get so booshed here because people in their heads aren't ready to accept that they're putting out one of the top routines we've seen. But it's one of those instances that I'm always kind of berating people about in judging education. I'm like, what else do you want them to do? They're hitting crazy bad attitudes, they're hitting Guidus, they're hitting Monster. They have all the big moves that any of the other teams have. And just because you haven't seen them perform on the biggest stage before doesn't mean they don't have a winning or deserving to win routine. Now, I'm not saying they should have won necessarily. I'd have to go back and watch, but I think they were way more in the mix than people gave them credit for. But that's also just kind of part of it. The other side of the kind of seeding is kind of okay. I've said before, it's not great, and I'm always trying to push back against it. But yeah, you do kind of have to like earn some points from your reputation in freestyle. And that's kind of ugly and not that nice. But again, like, there's so many awful biases that have nothing to do with how skilled you are. So I think it's just natural as a freestyler that you have to take your lumps at the beginning when people aren't used to you performing well. But eventually you'll start, you know, accruing that goodwill and you'll start winning in the future. So I think they were very awesome. They're everyone here, I guess, is the inaugural winner, but I'm going to try to give out the same awards every year. But so they're my first Rocky Balboa Going the Distance Award. Are there any other teams you can think of that you would make honorable mentions?
Not off the top of my head, because when you said the description of the award, that's who I thought of immediately.
Good. Yeah. Good. All right. My next award, I'm very excited about as well. This is the Hank Aaron Swinging for the Fences Award. So some of these, I don't even really know the background on. Hank Aaron is apparently an amazing baseball player. I know nothing about baseball. He's from way back in the day.
I can tell because you picked the wrong player for this award.
Who should it have been?
Babe Ruth is the player that swings for the... Hank Aaron had a good batting average, so he hit... Even if it wasn't a home run, it was still like a good hit.
But there's only one baseball player who has a move named after him.
That is true. That's Hank why I thought Aaron. You were going to go a different direction initially.
Well, in any case, we might have to tweak this award in the future after I do some baseball research. But for now, it's the Hank Aaron Award. And in fairness, the Hank Aaron move, which is one of the many names for the move where you do a like two arm flipper roll turnaround thing is a very swing for the fences kind of move. Mm-hmm. And this move, I'm still kind of working out the parameters of it, but it basically goes to the player who is absolutely going for the craziest stuff because they need to in order to have a chance at winning. So it's sort of like you're not an underdog, kind of like Gaia or Asha would be. You're in the mix to win, but you have to stretch your limits to win. It's kind of the best time as a freestyler, right? Where you're like, no one really expects me to win, but if I hit a bunch of crazy moves, then I could win. Mm-hmm. And this award, there's not even a close second, in my opinion. It goes to William Ho, who's out there going, he went for more triples in his round than all other freestylers in the world combined for like the last 5 years. He knew exactly what he needed to do to have a chance of winning, which I highly respect because there's a couple of different approaches and they're kind of both valid. But some people might be like, you know what? I'm probably not going to win. I'm just going to try to have a good round for myself. But I think it takes a higher degree of courage and self-confidence to be like, I'm going to go out swinging for the fences and I'm probably going to look really foolish when I don't catch all these crazy impossible moves. But all I care about is having a chance at winning and I'm going to do what it takes. So I thought it was really cool watching Will just go crazy. And it really reminded me of like how I felt in 2012, which is where like I was going for all these triples because that was the only way I had a chance. And it's really fun time in your freestyle life, but it's also extremely fun, I think, for everyone else to watch you go for it. And it doesn't last long because I think he will be a favorite probably starting this year. So remember while it lasts. Any other people you can think of that might qualify for the Hank Aaron Award?
No, because these are so, it's like one of those things where like you say a description and I guess who you're thinking, we're always going to pick the same person.
Okay. This is not my favorite award. I'm still like workshopping this one for sure, because I'm not sure if everyone will agree on the historical event that this relates to. I wasn't there. I just have heard different versions of it, but this is the Flippy Guy WTF award that goes to the player who's doing the weirdest moves that no one else can do and no one else has seen before. Can you guess who I'm giving this award to?
Dang. Okay, now it's tricky. My first thought is Ricky, but
you're close. Okay. You're in the right region. Okay. Ricky will win an award shortly, so okay. Don't you worry.
Who is it? Who is it? Tell me.
Chesko.
Okay, that now, was my second.
It's a little bit unfair because I think you might not think of Chesko right away because we've seen his crazy moves over the last few years. So they might seem like, oh, well, we've seen these before. But I'm still thinking like no one else is doing these moves that Chesko's doing. They're all completely bonkers and make no sense. And he's the only one who can do them. So I don't think there's a lot of other people in the mix. I think Ricky is a good honorable mention, because especially like when I think about his mixed round with Dunya, where he was sort of more of the carry versus like his playing with Chesko, where Chesko's more of the carry, you saw that he has a lot of that creativity and ambition that Chesko has in terms of the types of moves he does. But I'm still workshopping that one. That one is not going to be given out every year, and I think you only get to win that one once, so yeah. This is almost like a lifetime achievement award for Chesko, because it's really been a few years of just absolute utter insanity from him. All right, this next one, I don't even know if this should be an award, but there's really like sort of two people that kind of deserve this award. But this is the Arnold Schwarzenegger I'll Be Back Terminator Award. Okay. It goes to the player who, for whatever reason, any number of reasons, like performed well, but what you're really worried about is what's going to happen next year when they crush your soul. And I'm giving this to Zofia, who for reasons out of her control was not able to play mixed, even though she and Benno were in the middle of a dropless routine when Benno got very ill, unfortunately. But she is playing out of her mind. She was awesome in women's, getting second. And I would be very scared if I were still a competitor now about what she's going to do next year with all of her pent up energy that she didn't get to release this year. Is that a good pick?
Yeah, I agree. It's like the upward trajectory of her like skill and like performance in routines is, yeah, it's like continued from like 2 years ago again, which is like awesome to see.
But obvious honorable mention is William Ho, who is going to break all of y'all next year. We'll have a more thorough Durham update in a bit, but let me just foreshadow right now that just like he had a massive leap after Worlds last year, he has had a massive leap this year. Triples are going to be his bail at Worlds this year. Like, he will go for a quad and he will hit it. Okay.
I thought your honorable mention was going to go to Ray.
I thought about Ray. I have an award for Ray later, unless I lost it somewhere. Somewhere I have something for Ray. So we'll get back to Ray.
We'll save it for then.
Yeah. Okay. The next award, this is another award that maybe shouldn't be an award, but I'm making it an award. This is the Kelly Clarkson Since You've Been Gone Award. Okay. This award goes to the player that wasn't at Worlds, that you're so glad wasn't at Worlds because he would have crushed you. And this obviously goes to Ed O'Toole, who was not at Worlds for the second year in a row. And we can all thank our lucky stars because who knows what he's been cooking up the last 2 years. But I wanted to give a shout out to one of the top players in the world because he's amazing and he was deeply missed at Worlds. And I think after 2 years away, assuming he makes it to Toronto, he's going to have a lot to show us. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited to see what he brings in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, it is a kind of a crisis, and I'm probably the poster child for this, but a lot of the best players aren't competing, or they're competing in a low stake way. Like, they're just jamming with somebody and not necessarily trying to win, which I'm definitely worried about for lots of reasons. One, which I think we talked about before, which is like, if the top players aren't that concerned about Worlds, then why should anyone else? Like, how do we make Worlds so coveted that people want to put in the effort again? But it also has that like fixed mindset concern I have where I'm like, if you're going to compete, you should really try. Like, try to win. Don't just chicken out and just go for fun, which I'm the biggest chicken here. So come at me for that. But it's just a little bit interesting.
I do like the environment it creates. Like,
well, yeah, it's cool that like
there were four new world champions this year.
Yeah, which is super cool. And I do think, look, you lose a little bit in spectatorship when there's not as many crazy routines, but you gain a lot in terms of anyone can win, although we will come back to that because the next award, now we're really digging deep into my weird worldviews. I don't know if this award will be popular or not, or coveted or not. This is the Searching for Bobby Fischer You Can Only Lose Award, otherwise known as the Magnus Carlsen Existential Crisis Award, which goes to the player that's such a heavy favorite across the tournament that it's not even fun for them. And this award goes to
Daniel O'Neill.
Of course it goes to Daniel O'Neill. So it's a double-edged sword. So on the one hand, it basically goes to the best competitor at the event. On the other hand, it's not very fun to be the favorite in every division. And I think if you're smart, which I feel like I heard Daniel doing, you have to say, whoa, 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 don't put it on me. I'm just going to be out here doing my best. If I win, I win. And of course, win he did. But it is very hard to come in as the favorite in every division because it's hard putting three routines together, having all the partners, having all the stars aligned. But I heard a lot of talk in the early part of the tournament that everyone assumed the sweep was in play for him. And but for, you know, one judge not eating lunch at the right time, he could have swept all three divisions, but still ended with the 2-2-1. So he delivered on that performance. And I think hopefully for him this year, that's all gravy. But I wonder how competing will feel for him going forward now that he set the bar so high. But maybe he's immune to the pain and suffering that people like me and I know other freestylers have experienced in the past. Your thoughts just on that award in general?
I like it a lot, but it could just be in our context because I think we both felt that like pain in the past, and that's why.
Oh, I mean, these are all very specific to my psyche, these awards. Yeah. You know, I'm not trying to pretend they're anything else. Yeah. Okay, so go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I definitely had Daniel to sweep. That was my pre-Worlds prediction. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty safe bet. I think especially once it goes indoors too, that mm-hmm. always favors the top players. It's just less variance, more likely that they're going to win. So I think especially when it went indoors, that was a given. I mean, it is interesting, right? Because he actually really underperformed. He actually played well, but like he didn't win any of the semis, I think. Like he was seeded second, third in every round, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so like that, but he played well, so don't get me wrong, but like in every round before that, a team beat him, and I think that's just like the variance of being outside, because they were definitely the better teams, and once they were indoors, you know, other than the close pairs, which is the one that he didn't win, well, I guess mixed and pairs were quick, but like whatever, he like those were dominant runs by him, and I think him especially, he played super, super well, like he's really just like shredding out there. Okay. The next award, this is the There Will Be Blood Award for the best second place routine. Or it's really just the best not first place routine. And to give context, There Will Be Blood is considered one of the greatest movies ever made. Certainly one of the greatest movies of this century. And it was in the Oscar mix in a very impressive movie year where there was No Country for Old Men, Michael Clayton, There Will Be Blood, and I think like two other super heavy hitter movies. And There Will Be Blood did not win the Oscar for Best Picture. No Country for Old Men won the Oscar for Best Picture. And guess what? They're both like two of the greatest movies that have ever been made. So I don't think anyone would throw shade on There Will Be or No Country for Old Men, but a lot of people. And this is a part of the award. It's like kind of the routine that maybe in the future people will remember more, even if it's not the one that won. And so I might be like hurting myself a little bit or putting myself out here, but like I give this to you and Micah in mixed hairs. And to me, what it comes down to is that your routine was so unique that I don't think it will be repeated again. And it was unique in a way that wasn't, you know, sticky. It wasn't like a gimmick. It's something that I think will have real staying power, and I think it will be very memorable. But of course, the tragedy is that in freestyle, if you don't get first, your routine is basically forgotten to history. But I'm hopeful that if there's a routine that will have some longevity, even though it didn't win, it would be you and Micah's routine.
Thanks.
All right, my next award, this is the 2019 Tiger Woods I'm Still Better Than You Award.
Oh, okay.
And this goes to somebody not necessarily from their competitive performance, which is totally fine, but it goes to their presence on the jam field. And I give this to the one and only, I believe, the winningest freestyler of all time, Lisa Henricks. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, first off, I thought you were going to go to Simone Biles if you're going to pick something more relevant.
No, but it's about I'm still better than you. It's the comeback aspect of it that is significant. I mean, I guess you could say Simone Biles came back because of the whole thing and mm-hmm. whatever the last Olympics was. But like she still competed in that Olympics. This is more like you've been away for a while.
Okay.
You come back and you're like, yeah, I'm still the GOAT. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, especially in the jam scene. It was just like, I can't remember the analogy I used, but it's like everything works when Lisa is in the jam.
And before I forget, to give context, so Tiger Woods, obviously considered by many to be the greatest golfer of all time, he won a major tournament, which is basically like there's four majors. They're all basically worlds from our perspective. In 2019, when he was way past his prime, and I think it had been 10 years since his last win, and it was kind of a crazy heroic moment. So, but going back to Lisa, yeah, my analogy for what it's like having Lisa back, it was like I'd been living in a foreign country for a long time, and I was getting to speak with someone in my native language again. I love jamming with her. It was so comfortable and comforting. And there was one jam we had on, I think, finals day for easily 2.5 hours. And I was so happy because it was like one of those jams where you're like, I hope this jam keeps going because it's so hot, but we have been playing for 2.5 hours. Someone's surely going to get tired. But I felt like, okay, everyone must be loving this jam if everyone just won't leave. Like I was about to pass out from dehydration, but I was like, I cannot let this jam break up. And she was really the nexus of that jam. And it was so cool to play with her again.
Yeah, I was in that jam. I remember
from the beginning you left.
I know I left. I remember I was like, this jam is on a good path. I don't need to be here. Like it's self-sufficient.
Yeah. Ricky was in that jam too. Yep. But there'll be more of him coming up. Okay. The next award, which has no winner. It's the first award that has no winner. And I'm not even sure what this award is or means yet. It's the Tom Bombadil Award. Still working out the kinks. It goes to the player who is the best in a very specific way and can't be touched in that way, but didn't compete or competed in a way that prevented them from winning. What does it mean? I don't know. Just saying it out loud, I feel really silly that I made this report. But Tom Bombadil is a character in Lord of the Rings, the books, who appears in the middle of like the first book. And they're basically like, this is the most powerful being on the planet, but he's only the most powerful being in this one location. And he's so careless, we can't trust him with the ring. But if we gave it to him, he would be able to stop anyone from getting it, including the most powerful bad guy. Very silly award. I was thinking like if Jan Schreck were there, like he would be the Tom Bombadil award winner for having the craziest guides. But like maybe it would go to Chesco if he played with like a brand new player where it's like he has the craziest untouchable stuff, but he's not really trying to win. He's just sort of hanging out on the side. Like maybe Murdy could win this award, like one of the best players in the world, but he was kind of just jamming and having fun at the tournament. But if he wanted to, he could have sucked out everyone's souls. What do you think of that ridiculous award? That makes no sense.
It's hard for me to, I have it narrowed down to two, my predictions for your pick.
Okay.
Which are who would Benno you pick? And Dunk.
Those are great choices. Okay. I think it's working then. I think those are perfect examples. So Benno, right, has this super smooth, clean, old school game. I genuinely think, I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast. I told him, like, I think he's a top five, top 10 player in the world. And people just don't talk about him like that. But every time I play with him, I'm just like, you're insane. Like, you do incredible stuff. And it is so clean and so freaking smooth and whatever. Like, I don't know. We should be talking about it more. But the style makes it very difficult in the current routine system because it's much more methodical, slower. And, you know, if a combo takes too long, it's just you're not taking enough scoring opportunities. But Dunk's another great example because Dunk is like a bomb going off. Like, and when you think like, okay, like a bomb just went off, let's rest and recover. Then another bigger bomb goes off. That like Dunk is the only person in the whole sport who you could just make a category called Dunk, like Dunkish, and people would know how to judge it. And it would be a perfectly good judging system. But also not necessarily going to be like winning the competition. I mean, it's actually a great example too, because in a Turbo Shred event, he is like the best player. Like he wins lots of Turbo Shred events, but in like a routine based, you know, choreographed music situation, you know, he's just Tom Bombadil out there doing his own thing. But he did make the podium in co-op, which I think was his first podium and was super awesome. All right, well, that one definitely, we're going to have to workshop that one a little bit, but it is what it is. Okay, the next one, this one is going to be so obvious. I know you're going to guess who this is. I feel like I need a more me creative name for it, but as a placeholder right now, this is the Curse of the Bambino Award, and it goes to the players who were most owed a world title, who had waited the longest time, and despite being incredible, just now won. So the Curse of the Bambino is that, and again, I don't know why I have all these baseball analogies. I know nothing about baseball. My understanding is that the Red Sox traded Babe Ruth in like, you know, 1740, obviously not that long ago. And of course, Babe Ruth is considered like the best baseball player of all time. And because they did something so silly by trading them away, they never won a World Series for 86 years. And then they finally won one and the curse was lifted. So the curse was lifted for a few players this year. I mean, there's really three that come to mind, but I gave it to two. Can you guess which two players won the Curse of the Bambino Award?
Chesko and Jakob.
It's very interesting. That technically is the right answer, yeah. but I gave it to Jakob and Fabi, maybe because I was thinking of them as a team. But here's part of why I give it, especially to Jakob. Jakob's the most obvious, I think. But I think part of why I gave it to Fabi, which I might be wrong about because I think he is competing in Worlds this year, I knew Chesko would win eventually. It was just a matter of time. Like, there's no question Chesko would win. He's gotten so close so many times. So it didn't feel like he was cursed, or I don't know, maybe this is just my perception. I was just like, yeah, whatever, it'll happen. But like, Jakob Kochdal and Fabi, they haven't even competed for like a couple years. So who knows if they were ever going to win? And they don't. Yeah, I don't know. I just like thought they both have come really close in the past. They both are super beloved members of the community. Competition isn't necessarily their focus in freestyle, and they did it. They won. I think everyone was so happy for them. And then, yeah, I do think now that we talk about it, like, Chesko has to be in the mix here. But the three of them winning especially is so cool. Like, Ricky, I have an award for Ricky. We'll get there. Like, Ricky won either on time or even early, which is great for him. Now he can just relax and be the amazing player that he is. But to have put in the work for over a decade and then finally win is pretty sick. Okay, the next award I'm very excited about. Like, this is maybe my favorite award. And the name of it makes the least amount of sense because it doesn't apply to me. I stole this from a movie podcast. But the movie podcast has the Edie Falco Copland Throw Your Life Away Award. And in the movie podcast, it's the person you would throw your whole life away if they would be with you. Like, your celebrity crush, okay, who in the case of this movie podcast is Edie Falco from Copland. I would throw my life away to have this person in my life to jam with constantly is Ricardo. I am obsessed with Ricardo, all aspects. I'm obsessed with him as a person. I'm obsessed with how he jams. I'm obsessed with how he competes. There was no one else that I sought out more than Ricky when I was looking for my jam. And all of our jams were like 3 hours because neither one of us was ever going to leave. And he is amazing. And I'm obsessed with him.
I have two things to say about Ricky. The first one was in that Magic Jam afterwards with Lisa. He did a standing, it was a flaming Gaidus brush that surprised me so much that it got inside my guard, which hasn't happened in like 10 years. Like, normally I can just predict what's going to happen next. And it was so surprising and so well executed. It just like bounced off my chest and it still like worked because it was so clean.
Where do you think he learned that brush? Oh, this guy right here.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep going.
Number two, I remember thinking, or no, everyone was thinking this in Milan. It was like, wow, Ricky is really good for how long he's been playing. But then when I saw him this year in Warsaw, I was like, he is just good. Like, no qualifiers needed. He's just good.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure I've told this story before, but there is a round in Milan in like this quarterfinals or something where they knocked out a team that was sort of like a fan favorite team. And people were kind of like, wow, I can't believe they won. And I was like, what are you talking about? Do you see how good this person is? I mean, it was a classic example of no one knew who he was. And so he didn't get the scores that he would get if he did the exact same routine now. But I've been eyeing him for a long time and he's just an awesome, awesome player. Okay, the next award, which I really shouldn't give this award out. Like, it's probably going to create some friction, but whatever. I'm really fast and loose these days. I'm totally retired from you guys are never going to see me again. Like, who knows? This is the Social Network Snub Award. So another Oscar themed award. So in 2008, I believe, 1 year after the There Will Be Blood incident, there were two front runners for Best Picture. The King's Speech, a boring biopic about like Churchill or something that no one has thought about in 15 years. or one of the greatest movies ever made, The Social Network, about one of the most important figures and companies in the world, but done in like a brilliant, interesting, totally bizarre way. Incredible music score that I also do all the time. And somehow The King's Speech beat The Social Network, and I've never forgotten it, and I never will. And this goes to the team that I think got completely booshed in the judging. And to be clear, this is not a team that I think should necessarily win anything. It's just a team that I think their ranking in the finals was so far beyond what I thought appropriate, I haven't stopped thinking about it since. Which goes to Char Pal and Mateusz, who crushed their routine. Go back and watch it. They hit. They have like two drops. Mateusz is doing like crazy stuff. Char like triple fake brushes it. Char's playing on a whole another level, by the way. Super cool that she won. She would be another, by the way, Tiger Woods Award winner, because she hasn't won a world title, I believe, since 2012. Mm-hmm. So it was a long time coming for her again. But she and Mateusz crushed their round. And I remember commenting and being like, that's in the mix. Like, that could be a winning routine this year. And even after seeing all the other routines, I thought they had a great chance at the podium, and they got last place. So I'm just pointing out that I think they were awesome. Maybe I imagined it, although I did watch the video again and I thought they were really good, but call me crazy, they get my snub award.
Yeah, it's just the seating at work.
Oh man, but I mean, they got crushed on the points. I just like, I couldn't even see it. Ooh, this award I meant to double check, because I don't remember which routine it was, but I'm going to just give it out as poorly as I am right now. So this is the Kid Cudi Pursuit of Happiness Needle Drop Award. I also just stole this from my movie podcast. I don't even know what song that is or what movie it's referring to, but it goes to the best routine song. Maybe I'll come up. Actually, let's just freestylize it. This is the Believer Award. Okay. for the best okay. Freestyle routine song. And like, honestly, in my mind, there weren't a lot of contenders. I wasn't that excited or impressed with many of the songs I heard. There was nobody I had to go ask, like, what song was that? I didn't Shazam anything. But I'm giving this award to one of Duke's teams. I can't remember which team it was that played to a Rage Against the Machine song, I think. Or maybe it was even Linkin Park. But they played to some kind of like punk rock song, which is not a genre that gets a lot of freestyle love. And it was perfect for what they were trying to do.
I remember you telling me about it afterwards, and yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Okay. Also, for some reason, I made two versions of the Best Routine Award, and I gave it to you and Micah two times. But I will say, to prop them up, my alternative name for the There Will Be Blood Best Second Place Routine Award. Well, I guess maybe this is not the best second place routine, just the best routine award in any round. I'm still giving it to you and Micah, but this award, which again is distinguishable because it's not just second place, this I'm calling the Daniel Pinchas and Yuval Recorin Award for just the best routine of the tournament, just like out of nowhere. And that's because in 2018, Daniel and Yuval had the sickest routine, like, ever. It was so cool. And like how they use the music and how they use their skill sets, like, they weren't the best players in the world, but I just thought like that routine was absolutely so mind-boggling. And yeah, so that's not that exciting this year, but I think like in the future that could be like, sometimes there's that round in the semis that's totally unforgettable. But I don't think, like, there weren't any dropless routines, there wasn't anything super crazy this year, right?
No. Okay, I will take this time to say the, like, my favorite moment of the event. It was after Maya and I finished finals and we're walking off the field, and like, we knew we hit it. Yeah. And like, Maya's the tournament director, so everyone is just like so on her side, and everyone came from down the stands to congratulate her as we're walking off the field. And like, normally when that happens is everyone forms an orderly line and everyone says good job one at a time, but no, everyone, like, people could not contain themselves and they just made a swarm. And it was like in the movie where like the person's in the middle and they get lifted up. And yeah, that was a good moment.
Agreed. So the next award I'm not giving out, I didn't think there was any worthy options, but I'm interested to hear what you say. This is called the Faf de Klerk Giant Slayer Award. It goes to the underdog team that just trounces on a better team. But I don't think there is any like Cinderella stories where some lesser team dominated the Giants. I think that's happened in the past. Like, I think, I don't really remember the round that well, but like Shar and Mike in 2012 might have been Faf de Klerk Giant Slayers. But also, I should get background. So Faf de Klerk, these are all from sports that I don't know anything about. I don't know anything about rugby, but I know there's a man named Faf de Klerk whose name I love and whose YouTube videos I have watched religiously. He's a tiny man that just tackles giants and brings them down. And he is so exciting to watch. So it's sort of like the underdog, but it's the underdog who, it's the David that defeats Goliath. Your thoughts?
For the pick?
Yeah, like, was there anyone this year that you think fits the bill?
I don't have an immediate reaction for this one.
Okay.
Tell me.
I don't have anyone for that. That's just no one gets it, but it's in play. It's in play for the years going forward. And I'm remembering one last award that I need to write down, but I'm not sure I have a name for it. We'll workshop a name and then I'll give up the award.
Okay.
My next award, and I'm not sure I like this name either. I'm not like a big football or Patriots fan, but this is the Tom Brady sixth round draft pick award. This goes to the player who is going to be one of the greatest players, and they performed like that, but people aren't ready for it yet. So the idea here, right, is Tom Brady, clearly the greatest football player of all time. He was picked very late in the draft. No one thought he was going to be very good, but he quickly performed extremely well. And my idea here is like in year two of Tom Brady, when he's playing really well, you're like, wow, like this guy's pretty good. He's better than I expected, because you don't yet know that he's actually the greatest player of all time. So like it's a player that when we look back and we're like, wow, they got third. It's going to be like, well, obviously they got third. They're amazing. You know what I mean? Like now when we look at it, we're like, hey, like they really overperformed. How cool. But when we look back, we'll be like, duh. So for instance, like Zofia getting second in Milan in mixed, I think at the time it was like, wow, like she really did super well to get second. But looking back, it's like, well, duh, like she got second. She's amazing. It's kind of like that's so the idea. So I have two winners for this award. The first winner is Asha, obviously. Obviously. She's so good. I think when we look back, it'll be like, wow, I can't believe Asha and Gaia only got fourth place or whatever they got. It'll be like, ah, I can't believe they didn't win. Like looking back, I think we're all going to recognize that she's one of the best women players in the world right now. My next pick, which I don't like anymore, my honorable mention is Ricky, but I don't think I can give it to him because he already won.
I thought your second pick was going to be Ray.
I know I had Ray, but here's what I'm thinking about with Ray, because I have another award in mind. The other award I have in mind is like the coin flip award for like might be the greatest player of all time or just like a normal great player, which like sounds mean, but like there are times when I watch Ray where I'm like, this is literally like Jake Gauthier 2.0, but he's not there yet. He's like, and this happens a lot in sports where someone has these like this crazy raw talent, raw potential, and it's just about like what they can do. And I've been trying to like be careful about how much I pump Ray up versus like, I hope I also don't discourage him. Because on the one hand, like besides Will, who I think like obviously is on a trajectory to be one of the greatest players of all time, like I think he's already like a top five player in the world. And like probably close to in my top 10 all time, like come at me again, like you people, you don't believe me. But then when you see him play, you will understand. But then I'm like, okay, but like Ray, if Will didn't exist, I would be like, has anyone ever gotten as good as Ray has in the time that they've like Ray does like Ray is also like inventing. Ray does like a double trouble, like insta-voo over now that he just like came up with and started doing. I'm like, no player in the history of the world did that in year two. Like Ray can do the skid straight into the behind the back hold. That took me like 10 years to learn. Like he has crazy abilities. Like he, I think, is further ahead than Will was at this stage on a lot of aspects of the game. He's just missing like a few other pieces, but those pieces are starting to come together. And like, that's where I think like, I'm kind of interested in this other like coin flip award, because when like someone's missing pieces like that, if they fill in the pieces, then they're the best player ever. If they don't fill in the pieces, they're like an amazing player, but they have limitations that kind of like prevent them from reaching the highest level. But like lately, I feel like Ray has been finding that next level. So I think like he has sort of two like weaker points. One is I don't think he's as comfortable like moving his body. Like, I don't know if he played like a ton of sports before freestyle, and he's also like 7 feet tall. So it's just way harder to know how to like move your whole body to the right position and be set up. But he's made crazy strides in that in the last few weeks. Like, we're now in the best time of year in Durham where like the wind is very good and we're going on tons of brush runs. And now Ray knows where to be. He did the best crosswind roll set I've ever seen with his giant 8 foot long arms. I'm just like, yeah, I've literally worked on that like every day for 15 years and I'm just starting to feel comfortable with it. And you have arms even longer and skinnier than mine, and you're just doing crazy crosswind roll sets. So like, that's awesome. And then his other like weaker point was sort of catching, but kind of more like having the catch variety to be able to respond to lots of different situations. But he's made crazy strides in that, because he is now like Boguslav Bo level catch machine in the jam now. And honestly, at Worlds, I think he caught a crazy amount, really overperformed even what I expected as someone who plays with him every day. For instance, the first scarecrow I've ever seen Ray catch was during his competition in Worlds. And I was like, wow, like that was so crazy. I can't believe he actually caught that. But since then, he always catches the scarecrows. Like, he just doesn't drop them. So that's just part of his game now. And, you know, I've been telling him, like, watch Jake, watch Fabi. Like, you just have to learn to use your crazy body. But like, if you can do that, you could be the Victor Wembanyama of freestyle. And this is where you and I disagree a little bit, but I think like probably the majority view, not my view necessarily, is that just by size alone, you have a bigger mass potential than basically any other player right now. Yeah. Like what you will be able to do with your length pretty much can't be matched. So like, he's hitting Flamingitis now, like super well, and that's insane. So I want to come up with a good name, because it happens in basketball a lot where you're like, this person has so much potential, but that's
the Ray Award. I guess he's playing with Ray next year at Worlds.
Ryan Young, I believe.
Yep.
It is funny though, because I think Ray was on my honorable mention for a lot of these awards, but I think he was the sneaky surprise.
Yep.
I also think there's like a history of like multiple players coming up together in the same group. And it takes many years to sort out who the kingpins or queenpins of that group will be. Like, I don't think I'll make anyone too mad to say like, well, I'll put it on me. Like, when all the Roveretto guys came out, I was not the one saying Edo's going to be the unstoppable superstar.
That was my pick. Edo.
I know you picked Edo and you were right. Like, Edo he's Edo. He's Edo.
Will is also my pick.
Will is
just I picked Will before insane. He started competing.
Will, like, is playing with Will is incredibly humbling. And I have to say, and this is partially a post-Worlds glow, but it's mostly like a Will glow. I've not been this motivated about freestyle in 5 years. Like, I am playing every single day. I like want to get better. I'm learning so much new stuff because it's the only way to keep up. It's grow or die, or like adapt or die. And it's awesome. It's just so cool. And now, like, when it's me, Will, and Ray, it's the first time I'm like, this is going to be a sick jam. And it's like, I mean, it's so weird and sort of like arrogant to say this, but like, whatever, I'm free flowing today. I'm on a heater today. Like, it's so rare that I jam with someone where I feel like they're on my level, basically. And look, that's mostly because I live in Durham. Like, I don't go to, like, Worlds is once a year. And at Worlds, there's only a handful of players that I think really, like, push my bounds. Or I'm like, wow, I want to try that. That looks crazy. I don't know how to do that. But now we're with where Will is, especially, I'm like, I feel like I'm jamming with Edo. And the idea of getting to jam with Edo now going forward, because I have a little mini Edo in Durham, is super exciting. And I am desperate, desperate to make sure that Will stays here when he graduates, because I will be absolutely broken if he leaves. But yeah, it's really cool. And you got to think from like my perspective, if you're going to stop competing and watch like new stars emerge, you can't do better than the new star being your protege. It's like the biggest win for children. Me possible. Like,
Maya came over to me and was like, oh, I was watching James while Will and Ray were playing. It's like, he had such a proud dad moment.
But it's like, it's also like the bad part of being competitive coming out, where I'm like, oh, you thought you guys were going to win when I retired? Well, guess what? Like, good luck with this guy. See if you can stop him. Like, it's crazy. Like, I think for a while, you know, I could talk myself into, well, like, me and Daniel were super good after our first few years. But now in year whatever, three or four, no one's ever been even remotely close to where Will is at now. Now, in fairness, like the hardest stage comes up when you're an adult and you have to like go to work and then find the time or energy or motivation to jam. But like, even if he just got like better within the game he already has, I think he's a top two player in the world. Like, basically, you know, Edo is like the only one that I still think can do everything Will can do, and then a bunch of other stuff. But it's cool. The thing that the thing that is extremely unfortunate for me is now we have to end the jam with a quad, and quads are hard, and they're really hard on my legs, and it's tough out there, and it's making now
you've become obsolete. I think you can't keep up anymore.
I'm still hanging in there. I'm like a mile vacuum, you know. Their Dysons are probably better, but I can still suck up some debris for a little bit. I mean, at least until we have a child. But like, yeah, like I have to adapt. I have to learn. It's wild.
Okay. I need to go back to Asha for a little bit.
Yeah. Sorry, okay. That's me being a proud dad. I don't want to not give Asha enough love either.
Okay. So the first time seeing her play was in semis in competition. And then afterwards, I was like, I need to jam with her. So I like start the jam with her, and I was impressed with her competition, but jamming, I was like, now I could do a whole podcast episode talking about Asha. Like, just the one little bit I would say is how she uses her body is just on a whole another level. Like, specifically her monster. Mm-hmm. When most people catch monster, they're using their flexibility. Monster is considered a flexibility move, but Asha is catching it using her muscles. And like, when most people catch monster, they're hunched down because they're trying to get their arm to snake around. But
I think
Asha,
I said something
upright.
About this on, like, the commentary. Like, I noticed that too. It's crazy.
They're like, in order to have your body upright, you have to use your muscles in your back. Like, who is thinking about their upper back muscles when they're catching a monster? Asha is. Yeah.
And so my experience, like, seeing Asha unveiled. So I met her at the dinner, like, the night before, whatever, someday playing. And I feel like I went up to her and I was like, are you even at the right table? I was like, who are you? Like, what? Like, you know, this is a freestyle frisbee party, right? And she's just like some person I've never met, which is so rare to like run into a freestyle I've never met before and whatever. So I was talking to her and I kind of figured, well, this must be a really new, super casual freestyler, especially when someone's from the place the tournament is at. I'm like, you might be super casual and you're just here because these are your friends and it's in your hometown. So I didn't, you know, I figured if I haven't heard of you, how good could you be? Which was obviously the wrong thing to think. Because then the next day when I saw her play, I was like, wow, like, she's one of the best players in the world. And I was completely just blown away by her and her game. And she played well basically every round. I think she had maybe one round that maybe wasn't as good as the other rounds. I remember like talking to her a little bit about it afterwards, but just having like all the tools. Like, one thing I really like from her is she has the fundamentals down really well. Like, having all your catches be really solid and having a nice variety of catches in all the different zones is such a useful, powerful tool mm-hmm. that she has down. And having good form right out the gate is so valuable. I mean, I think for me, it wasn't until like 2019 that my form was sort of tolerable, maybe 2018. And that feels like 8 wasted years of my life. It's like, I'm never going to want to see anything from that time period because it just doesn't look very good. So to come out of the gate looking so good just makes a huge impact. Okay, those are all my awards. Can you think of any awards you would give out or that I should have made up?
I have the winner, but I'm trying to think of the award. So this would be, it would be like some like grand adventure. If you're like, you have a lot of Lord of the Rings references, so this would be like the Frodo Award. But Moffer, first of all, coming all the way from Colombia and then having a spectacular tournament, just
that
like
is
in the jams
such a
and,
good
in
call.
The
tur-
and in competition. Yeah.
Oh, man. Now I feel terrible because you're so right. Like she would be in the mix for a lot of the awards. She played so well in the finals. Who was her mixed partner? Was Chesco, right?
Chesco. Yeah, they got third place.
I remember watching them in mix and I was like, she's kind of carrying this round. She played. And the other thing too, is we saw her last year and her improvement from last year is massive. She's playing so much better now and just a super delightful person to spend any amount of time with. But she was really great. Seems super focused and dedicated and like wanting to learn. And yeah, what a journey. We know that it can be super hard when you're coming from Colombia to get the visa in order and do everything you got to do to make it happen. Just the privilege that we have that it's so easy for us to just fly off to Worlds, which she and so many other players don't have the benefit, but then to get there, totally shred. And I think she also did kind of like the whole tour, like went to Sandslash and got a lot of exposure to European freestyle, which I think will push her game even further and further going forward. And hopefully she has the bug so that she'll do all the miserable things she has to do to get to Toronto next year, which is pretty exciting. Okay. Any other Worlds awards type event type things?
Nope. I think, okay. Yeah, that was my main call out. Yeah.
I will talk very briefly about my experience commentating.
Okay.
So it was not ideal circumstances because we didn't really have a proper setup. And like, especially the first round, like the mic, I guess, didn't even like really pick up my voice. But I think it was fun for me. I liked doing it. And I think there's value to be added by having commentary. There are things that I learned and that you were kind of giving me feedback on that were sort of like worth talking about a little bit. So one thing, if you go on the videos that have been posted from Worlds, you can sort of hear my commentary, at least for some teams, but not for others. But I think what was most valuable is the part that it's not going to be in the videos, which is talking between the teams. So I think this year is probably average. There were some early rounds where I thought there was way too much time between the teams. I mean, there's always way too much time between the teams, but it wasn't like egregious this year. It was just kind of normally bad. And that's where I had a lot of fun because it was almost like being on the podcast, except there was no one for me to talk to, where I could be like, here's who these people are. Here's what their expectations are. Here are their strengths and weaknesses. But then, so I felt like I did a good job at that, but it was much harder during the routine to know what to say and how much to say and like what context to provide. And the feedback you gave me, which I kind of thought about myself, which I think is right, is I don't think I should be doing like play by play, like you would another sport where you're like, that's a good flamingo. That's a good scarecrow. Like whatever. That's not like, who cares? I think part of it is I'm always trying to copy what Skippy did and my routine with Graf. But Skippy, I think, is more of a sports connoisseur than I am and does a much better job of like play by play and like knowing the right tone to bring. But I do think probably what I need to do more is basically score the round for the audience. And say like, that's probably a 7, or like that drop is going to hurt them, or that drop's not that bad. And like things like that, that the audience probably couldn't do themselves. But like, there's a couple things in retrospect I've been thinking about. So one, I didn't really think about how the video would be cut later. So like so much of what I said is not in the final video. So some of the things I say in the routine don't make any sense without the context of what I said before. So I think when I comment in the future, I'm going to make sure the discussions around the routine are self-contained so that you can just cut that part out and put it in the video and it will make sense. I think I will definitely try to get more intel from all the teams about, or do they have a routine? Like, how complex is it? Is it multiple discs? Because I think it was effective when I could set the expectations. Like, before Will would play, I'd always say, like, Will someone who might go for a triple? And if he hits it, that's going to be a massive point boost. And if he drops it, like, he's probably out of it. So, like, stuff like that was sort of fun. But also, like, one of the tricky things, right, is I'm aware that whatever I say is going to be on this poor team's routine forever. And so, depending on the routine, I don't want them to be like, well, I hate watching my routine because it's the part where James says I do an ugly flamingo or something. So I like try to avoid that. But I also think it depends on the routine. Like, if it was a team that I thought might win, I was like, try to be like Skippy, try to make it so that if it's like, if they do win, the commentary makes sense. You don't want them to like, you don't want them to like hit the winning routine and be like, well, that was pretty good, but who knows? And like move on. Like, so, but this year was kind of tricky because there wasn't that like, obviously they won kind of moment. So that'll be interesting, but I definitely, something I want to work more on because I think it could be valuable.
Yeah. I think what's unique about your commentary is most of the time the commentators are like a one-off, like they just get volunteers that are at the event, but you're going to probably do this over a series of events so you can like improve, which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that is interesting, and I hate to say this out loud, it's so much easier on my own. Like, and I bet you if like you and I did it, or I did it with someone a bunch of times, it would be better. Like, I think two is almost always better than one. But I think what's so hard is if you don't have a chance to develop that chemistry, it's hard to find the right cadence of who's talking when and about what. And I think in other sports, which I think we were talking about before, it makes sense that there's a play-by-play and an analysis person. But I almost feel like in freestyle, maybe that doesn't make as much sense because, as we just said, the play-by-play doesn't really work very well. And the routines are so short anyways. It's like the play-by-play person wouldn't be really doing anything. But without that distinction between play-by-play and analysis, it's harder to figure out, well, who is supposed to say what during the routine and how do you avoid talking over one another when you're both trying to focus on the routine. So I don't really know. I kind of like doing it by myself, but we'll see how it plays out. I think I've heard that Jake might come to Worlds next year, which would be awesome because we can really up the live stream. And if he wanted to commentate with me, I would be pretty excited. I mean, maybe I'll get fired and won't be asked to commentate again, but I'm sure I'll find a way to finagle my way into that role. Because at least for me, like, it makes me feel like I'm still part of Worlds, even if I'm not doing really anything else. I miss judging because I like judging, but I was glad I didn't have to judge because I just didn't want to be a part of any kind of controversy, which doesn't seem like there was any real like controversies or anyone really mad. So like that was good.
Yeah. I think it was pretty straightforward.
Okay. I think the only other topic today, which is the germ update, which for everyone I made last, because I don't think everyone is as interested as I am. So obviously I talked a lot about Ray and Will, so I don't really have a lot to add to that. We, once again, like the world conspires against us in Worlds was during peak freestyle recruiting time, which is a huge disappointment. And I'll get to the good news about it, but just like kind of interesting things to think about, which we talked about before. It's like how much of everything that happens in the world that just comes down to random, seemingly unrelated things. So like Duke changed their orientation and now most of the students during orientation have events where they're like off campus or they're busy. So they're not walking around the campus. That has been devastating to our recruitment efforts. Worlds has been around the best time to recruit. That has knocked out 2 years of would be excellent recruiting. Duke is renovating one of the dorms on the field we play at. So that whole side of the field is fenced off. That has really reduced the amount of foot traffic that goes through the gym. Like all these random little silly things that have nothing to do with whether or not people want to play, I think really hurt us this year. And we did have our one day that we seem to always have where it's a bonanza and everyone is coming up to learn how to freestyle. So that was awesome. And I will say, which I've probably said before, but like I was definitely really aware of it this time. People are coming up to us when we're teaching, not when we're jamming. Like once we start teaching one person how to delay, that's when the floodgates open and everyone comes over to be like, how do I do this? So there is something interesting about like, how can you create that environment? Optics, yeah. And like, I was joking with you that if you're in Tempelhof jamming and you want to attract new players, pretend to teach each other the delay, like just stand out there and practice the delay. Cause I think people can see, they can see that someone's learning. And I think like a lot of places where people play all the time, like the people around Tempelhof have probably seen freestyle before and they're maybe even interested in learning, but they weren't going to interrupt you while you were jamming. But if they see you teaching somebody else, they might come up and ask you about it. It's like, that was kind of interesting to think about, like, wow, like all these people have been coming up to us, but none of us have been doing anything cool. Like they don't even know. They might not have even seen freestyle. They just think the delay is cool and they want to learn how to do that. So that'll be kind of like a point of emphasis going forward. But we do have our next Will. We have a diehard new freestyler named Matthew. He's definitely our only freestyler who's really showed up again, but he's jammed at least 25 times in the last 2 weeks. We already did a video night that he came to at my house and we watched freestyle videos. Huge shout out to Ollie, who made the sickest freestyle video I've seen in 5 years, called the goal outro video or something. Highly recommend, like seriously in my top 5 or 10 freestyle videos I've ever seen. That was a huge hit. And obviously we ended with 2003 Seaside Super Hane. And one little special moment about the video night was Will talking about his experience having had a video night early on and then having a video night now that he sees everything and like knows what's happening and is like, I can do all that stuff. And I saw Will doing what like I used to always feel where I'm like, Will is like talking in a way because he really wants Matthew to like it. I feel like I shouldn't say this on the podcast, and it's like so personal. It's just my reading, like maybe Will didn't think about it. But like, just like if you show someone a movie you really like and you really want them to like it and you're like trying to set it up like that, I was like, Will is doing that right now. Like Will is like explaining what's happening in a way to kind of like show how cool it is. And like there's like this performative aspect to how we were watching the videos to make Matthew fired up. And it wasn't just me. It was like Will was doing that too. And I was like, that is super cool to see him take on that role. So whatever, we're jamming basically every day now. It's super awesome. We've also been upping our Z throwing. I think Will basically throws over 950 every time now. I'm definitely more day by day. I think I can't throw that hard 2 days in a row anymore. But I will say I've gotten to the point, and I have to kind of build it up. Like if I get out the Z machine, it usually starts out in like the low to mid 900s, and I have to like rebuild my throw to get high. But I can usually get to the point where like every seventh throw is over 1,000 for the just normal backhand. Wow. Which makes me think it's definitely possible to just consistently throw 1,000. Like that is
for sure
doable.
100%.
It's a lot of energy expended to get
it's because
that extra
we're throwing
50.
Inefficiently. We're gonna find the actual way to throw spin someday. It'll be like, we'll look back the dark ages.
Like right now, whether this is true permanently, I don't know. It's basically I lost Ryan. All right. I never stopped recording. So okay. I'll just pick us back up.
Okay. We should talk about that text. That was
awesome.
Yeah,
I know. I have a whole thing about the text.
Okay,
we're back. We lost Ryan for a second. Ryan will have to figure out how to edit this so that you can hear it. What were we actually talking about?
I don't even remember. That text just threw me off.
I remember what we're talking about. So let's talk about the text that I sent you. So you disappeared from the Zoom and I texted you, I lost you. But what I actually texted you is I love you. So, So you left the Zoom and you just got a text from me that says, I love you, which I'm glad it's you. I think that's fine. I do love you, Ryan. I text you that all the time. Not really, but it was definitely a funny text.
I thought it was like Starship Troopers where they're on the video call and the meteor like hits the person they were talking to in real time while they're on the call. I was like, did you just see the nuclear mushroom go off outside your window? You're like, I love you. And then the connection dies.
And then you had the question you would have for yourself the rest of your life is whether I was trying to text that to you or Margaret.
Because yeah, you guys, that's what I thought as well.
You guys are the only two people pinned on my texting. But I actually have an even crazier, a very unfortunate mistexting story from this week. I was texting Margaret and it was about some like complicated work policy that I was trying to figure out. And I was trying to text her, well, I don't even understand what this policy is supposed to mean. But what I actually texted her was, you don't even understand what this policy is supposed to mean. Because if you look at a keyboard, a U is right next to the I. And so I was trying to say, my sweet dear wife was just like, oh, well, like, I think I do understand the policy more or less, but okay. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I was saying that I don't understand the policy. I was not accusing you of being really dumb or something, but it was one of my worst mistexts I've ever had. And it's funny that it doesn't happen more, that you don't say you when you mean I, because like that goes so wrong. Like I was being self-deprecating, like I don't understand this, but what I was really saying is like, you don't understand this, you don't understand anything. Anyways, the last thing we were talking about was throwing more spin. Right now, I think whether this is actually true or true for the future, I wonder what disc golfers think. I think like it's a power log. So like every additional little bit of RPM you need to throw requires a greater and greater amount of strength. Cause it seems like 920 feels like no problem now, but 1000 feels like I'm exerting, like every cell in my body is expending all of its energy just to get an extra 50 RPM.
Yeah.
But that's on my list of things that I'm trying to do. I will say, without like calling anyone out, I brought the Z meter to Worlds and asked a bunch of the best throwers to throw it. And most people were in high 800s, low 900s. So a lot of our most storied throws, not as much as we thought. The one exception, no surprise, Dunk. Everything Dunk threw is over 1,000. So Dunk is definitely the winner of the throw competition. Yes, some other people got like mid to high 900s a couple times, but Dunk was like the Northern Star, just 1,000, 1,000, 1,000, 1,000. I did break the 1,100 mark. I threw like 1,150 with a staker or something, or maybe it was less than that. It was like something over 11 with a staker. And then I broke 1,150 with a Mac, like maybe like 1,180, but we don't get to try Macs much because I think it'll break it. So I've only done two Macs, but that makes me think 1,200 is in play.
Yeah.
And one little aside about the staker, by the way. So when we were doing it at Worlds, Tom came up filming me and he was like, throw your best throw. So I threw a staker and he was like, that didn't look like very much. And I was like, I guarantee you that's well over 1,000. And that was then my record. It was like 1,079. But it's interesting that it like wouldn't look like a lot of spin, but it has a lot of spin. That's like how Dirty Harry's is. So like sometimes things that look like a lot of spin don't, and vice versa. Just kind of like interesting concept.
Now that the tech disc has been out a little bit, there are videos of disc golfers using it and posting their numbers, and like they care about the distance, but it also has a spin there, and like everyone's throwing over 1,000, just like amateurs.
And but I want someone to tell me like physics wise how to make equivalent a disc golf RPM to a Skystyler. Oh,
using,
because it's a smaller diameter, right?
Yeah, it's. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So like, I assume if they did the exact same throw with a Skystyler, which I get doesn't totally make sense, would it be like 20% less? And obviously they're not targeting spin. I'm just like genuinely curious, like what people throw on a Skystyler if they were trying. Because like, I don't know, but if whatever, Paul McBeth threw a Skystyler trying to throw as much spin as possible, would he throw 900 because he's not tried to do that before and it would just be novel to him? Or would he throw like 1500 and be like, oh, this is easy, you guys haven't figured this out?
No, I think it's the technique. That's my prediction.
But I'm starting to think that the limit is like 1300 max.
13
probably like less than that, but like this is like, it's so, on the one hand, it's ridiculous to make a guess about like what the limits are because people always overestimate themselves and underestimate the future. On the other hand, like I've heard this crazy principle before that I won't be able to articulate at all. That sort of like mathematically we assume like humanity is almost over because usually you're in the middle, not the end. And if we're in the middle based on like the number of people we have, whatever, it's like this cool thing. But I think like, if you just kind of think about a limit, like this many people have worked this hard and our best throws are 1100, how much more juice can you squeeze? And my guess now is like, someone someday will throw a 1300 backhand.
Okay. Here is my future prediction. Do you remember back in the day when you would have CDs, they would have the speed on it. It was like 58X. Mm-hmm. And that speed was how fast it can spin before it shatters from centripetal force.
Yeah.
I think it is possible to throw a disc at that speed, at whatever that number is. Like no one has gotten there. But
that's a bold claim. I mean, wouldn't your arm just break before the disc shattered?
I have an idea, but I haven't been able to like do any work on it till I retire. But I even have a name for it.
For a throw you're going to do?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'll have to get some secret intel okay. about that because that sounds pretty sweet. Cool. Well, I think that's it. I'm obviously going to spend the rest of the day watching Dota 2, which I assume you will as well. And yeah, you probably won't hear from us for a while, but if we get fired up about something, we will let everybody know. Okay then. So check us out at clockercounter.com. I think that website's still up. Email us at clockercounter@gmail.com. I feel a little bad because we got a bunch of really nice emails right after we decided we were going to take a long break about how everyone enjoyed the podcast. So sorry to the few devout fans out there, but we'll still have some occasional updates until we get a little more fired up. So thanks for listening and hope you have a good jam.